A lot of people are running to gold maybe just because they don't really get Bitcoin. They haven't really figured it out yet, but they're still looking for that flight to safety.
I haven't heard anything about these $5,000 Doge checks. Maybe they're just going to send my Doge check to the farmers and they don't have to print new money to do it.
That is possible. That is very possible. Fix the f***ing roads. Make sure that, you know, everything is up and running the way it should. But stay out of people's lives. If a business performs badly, let it fail. It's not your place to bail people out, no matter who they are.
It is April Fool's Day that we are recording this, so if you take anything seriously on this show, don't today. Let's jump right into the news, guys. We've got gold breaking an all-time high, officially surging above $3,150 an ounce for the first time in history. Seems like markets are sniffing out something. Rick, I'd love to hear your thoughts on what this means and what you think it could mean for Bitcoin here in the coming days or months.
Sure, yeah. I mean, gold's performance is pretty remarkable, right? That I think it's hit all-time highs, historic all-time highs. So clearly, like you said, I think people are running a little bit scared at the moment. They're looking for these safe places to park their wealth. I think they don't really trust what the economy is doing. The stock market looks a bit shaky. You've got lots of turbulence, all this talk of tariffs, and people are thinking, oh, I want to get out of the way of this. And, you know, gold has been this traditional safe haven, and I think that's where they're running to. Now, like a lot of other Bitcoiners, I think Bitcoin is superior to gold and probably a better strategy. But I think we probably touch on this every time we speak, right? That we're in this weird little bubble where we're obsessed with Bitcoin. But the reality of it is, you know, only 4% of the population own Bitcoin, and even fewer people own it in self-custody. So a lot of people are running to gold maybe just because they don't really get Bitcoin. They haven't really figured it out yet, but they're still looking for that flight to safety. So for me, it kind of suggests that, I guess I'm not surprised that people are flocking to gold. Think of where all the wealth in the world is. It's typically with the older generations who have seen gold as a store of value for a long, long time. They're maybe a little bit less likely to be into Bitcoin and all this techie stuff. But I think it's a good signal to show that, you know, you need to be moving towards hard money. And Bitcoin's even harder money than gold. So I think what we'll see is probably a second order effect over the next few years. You know, I think it'll take a long time, actually, for Bitcoin to totally demonetize gold. So maybe in the short term window, if I'm a guy with loads of money in stocks and in the bank, then jumping into gold is not, I don't hate it as a strategy, right? It's better than sitting in cash. There's no question about it. And even in the UK, right, you can buy gold coins like gold bullion, keep it in your house. It is free from capital gains, weirdly enough, if you buy it in gold coins over here. The problem is, and the reason it's not as effective as Bitcoin is, go and take those gold coins and try to leave the country with them. You're going to have an absolute nightmare, right? And lots of people, I can assure you, are trying to get out of the UK for various reasons at the moment. So I would say it's bullish for Bitcoin. A lot of gold holders, obviously very happy, but I think it is telling of this sort of flight to safety. People realizing maybe the game is up. And I think the Bitcoiners are just, we're part of that population. We're probably still a little bit ahead of a lot of people here. But give it time. And I think people realize that Bitcoin is the ultimate safety net. And that's where the money will flow eventually.
Yeah, I just did a quick search. Baby boomers hold approximately almost 52% of the nation's wealth in the U.S., and they are probably the generation most likely to understand gold as a store of value. And the fact that Gen X, the silent generation is a much older generation on their last legs, and millennials. Millennials right now only control 6.5% of total wealth, and so the inflows to Bitcoin as the safe haven asset are probably going to be much less than gold, and in the next couple of years, until more people figure it out. I have a lot of confidence, though, because the baby boomers do listen to the Larry Finks of the world and, you know, eventually the financial advisors who are guiding them through retirement and, you know, into, you know, estate planning and all of that are going to have to wake up to Bitcoin's outperformance and all of that. Tony, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, it's turbulent times are definitely coming because, I mean, if gold has surged so much, you know, that's a sign of, you know, trouble on the horizon. And like you said, people will flock to what they understand, to what they're comfortable with. So whether it's gold or real estate or whatever it may be, you know, they'll take the path of least resistance, knowing that their money is safe in any shape, way or form other than just sitting in a bank account. But ultimately, you know, Bitcoin is going to outperform all of these traditional, you know, safe havens. And it's just going to take a little bit of time until, you know, people's attention starts, you know, coming to the other side. Gold, real estate, these are like traditional safe havens, but they're not portable. You know, like you're literally stuck with them if you're holding them in the event that you want to like move them somewhere or you physically want to leave with them. You can't. You know, if it's a piece of property, you have to sell it, deal with the taxes and, you know, all the headaches that come with it. And if it's gold, they'll arrest you at the airport thinking that you stole it somehow, right? So Bitcoin, you know, like has so many positives to it, but it comes from the world of tech, something that's like a foreign language to pretty much still the majority of those holding old money. And that's going to take a little bit more time, but it is going to happen. I mean, you know, people follow the best returns eventually. And Bitcoin is the fastest horse in this race. And I don't see that stopping, you know, anytime soon. But the underlining message is that bad news is coming. So if you're sitting with cash in your bank account, get out. You know, put it wherever you want. Just not, don't leave it there because, you know, that bad signs are all over the place.
Yeah, it's interesting that at a time that the government seems to be trying to push people back into the bond market, the safe haven asset that people are running for is sound money and gold in particular right now. And I think we're going to see a huge swing toward Bitcoin in the coming years as people figure it out. Speaking of, this is a technology that many people don't understand. Elon Musk says that the government deleted a terabyte of financial data to cover their crimes, but they don't understand technology, so we recovered it. This is both funny and sad and unsurprising, I would say. Tony, I'll let you take this one first. I suspect you're not surprised that the government would be covering up crimes that it's committed, and you're probably equally unsurprised that there's a way to recover the information that they've tried to conceal.
I was concerned that this was an April Fool's joke, but thankfully it's not, you know, because it was posted today. Yeah, for sure, man. I was like mind blown when I read this, because can you imagine like you're trying to conceal financial crimes by just hitting the delete button, you know, and thinking it's completely vanished off of your hard drive? That's like tech 101, like a five-year-old these days knows that that's impossible.
Tony, that was like Hillary Clinton wiping her email server with
Yeah. If you've saved it on a computer, you know, unless you've put that hard drive through like an EMP attack or you've like blown it up into a million pieces, it can 100% be recovered most of the time by somebody who knows what they're doing. So that's going to be interesting now that they've recovered so much data, you know, hard proof. But, you know, are people going to go to jail because of that proof? That is really what it comes down to. I mean, it's all fun and games, you know, to say, yeah, we recovered the proof of corruption and what have you. But it's really meaningless if that it stops there, right? Like you have the proof. Now go after the people and put them where they belong. That's what I'm waiting to see if ever, you know, that that unfolds. But it's definitely good news, you know, to put a smile on my face.
Yeah, the sad thing for these people is that there are some really technically unsophisticated solutions to this problem. You've got acid, you've got, you know, strong magnets. There are a lot of different ways that, you know, remove data from different types of hard drives. Rick, what's your take here?
Yeah, just crazy. So I did a bit of digging. Apparently it was the U.S. Institute of Peace. So, you know, these very
What is that? What's the, I'm going to look this up.
I don't know, but it's kind of, it makes me chuckle, right? Because it's the U.S. Institute of Peace, which kind of gives you this impression that it might be a department full of very lovely people on a crusade to try and change the world or whatever. And then someone chaps on the door and says, hey, can we just have a quick look at what you've been doing with all this money? Delete, delete, delete. And they're all running out of the front. It's just amazing. I'm with Tony on this. You know, I'm all for uncovering corruption and all this sort of stuff, but we have to start seeing some sort of justice, right? Otherwise, it's all a joke. It's all a charade, right? Unless some heads roll. I mean, you know, like Hillary Clinton, for example. I don't know. Maybe you're an American, Michael. Maybe you can explain to me how the hell that woman is not in jail. I don't understand it. And well, from a European point of view, I don't know how Ursula von der Leyen is not in jail. So, you know, are we actually, when we catch these people with their hands in the cookie jar, are we actually going to tell them off and ground them like we should do? Or are we just going to let them sort of run off and do as they please? But look, the interesting thing about this story is, I think anyway, is a really good advert for Bitcoin. Imagine a world where, you know, we're all on a Bitcoin standard and the only way that the government can raise any taxes is in Bitcoin. So, you know, I'll swerve the whole discussion about whether taxes should exist, right? And we'll get straight into the point of, let's imagine the US government collects its taxes in Bitcoin. Well, everybody in the world will be able to verify on chain where is the money, and then we can verify where is it spent and where is it gone, because Bitcoin is immutable. So, all right, these jokers didn't know how to delete the data, but if someone in there with a brain had been smart enough to figure out, no, we need to go a bit further, there might have been ways to completely remove it. But with Bitcoin, you've got this immutable ledger where that wouldn't be possible. So the sooner we get away from this funny money, the better. There'll be less corruption, and you won't need Elon Musk chasing all of these people around trying to catch them out.
Amen. For anyone listening who's interested, the U.S. Institute of Peace is an independent, nonpartisan institution established by Congress in 1984, and its mission is to promote international conflict resolution and prevent violent conflicts, which it's done a great job at, because, you know, we haven't had Gulf Wars or wars on terror or wars in Ukraine, or we're not bombing Yemen. So far, so good. Mission accomplished. Rick, I completely agree with you. I think that's maybe one of the things that people forget about Bitcoin, is that besides sound money and all so many of these benefits we talk about, honestly, it's transparency. To the extent that government must continue to exist, which, yes, we can debate that all day long, and to what extent they should collect taxes, if at all, and all of that, is there is a level of transparency that you can look at the ledger and see what's going on. And that alone, I think, just completely disarms the political class that's been, you know, gouging the people for a long time. So excellent point. All righty. We've got, speaking of government, Trump is considering a bailout. This is hilarious. Considering a bailout package for American farmers to shelter the domestic agricultural industry from his tariffs, according to the New York Times. So as usual, government is both the arsonist and the firefighter, unsurprising. You know, I think it's just another good example, though, of he's going to win a lot of votes within that community. And there are a lot of people, too, who don't think practically about, you know, economics or any of the way that these things work. And they have like an affinity toward farmers, right? Like I have a family, you know, generations of farmers in my family, and it's easy to sympathize, when in reality, if we just opened up a free market and made everyone compete on a global stage, the best would rise to the top, as they should, and some people would fail. That's just, you know, part of trying to run a business or a company, and it's unfortunate that we always have this interventionalism from government in these markets. Tony, I'll let you take this one, because I'm sure you've seen your fair share of government intervention in markets, and you know how this plays out.
Man, this is how else you want it to play. It's a collapsing system. It's like, think of it as having, you know, thousands of leaking buckets, and they're trying to, you know, like plug the one that's leaking the fastest at any given moment in time. That's what's going on here. But it's all falling apart. Like, everybody's drowning because of these buckets that are, you know, leaking all over the place. The tariffs are taxing you. So everything that you're going to buy now is going to go up by whatever, you know, jacked up tariff rate that is. How now they want to save the farmers. How are they going to save them? They have to print money, right? So it's happy days for the farmers, but for everybody else, your purchasing power just got screwed again. So you still have the tariffs that are ongoing. You have more money printing, which is debasing you even more. But the farmers are happy for now, until some other problem happens that, you know, screws the farmers. Then you have to run and put out that fire. And it's like, you know, try to chase the next emergency. But ultimately, the whole thing, whichever way you look at it, everybody's getting screwed in fiat. So it doesn't really matter what they do. This is just a classic example of the end. You know, we've spoken about this many times. There's no fixing this. You can't patch a leaky hose, right? You can always, like, you can try to tape it up, but it's going to keep squirting all over the place. And eventually it's just going to, you know, decay. The only solution, replace, format and replace completely by something that, you know, these clowns can no longer, manipulate and corrupt. And that is sound money, Bitcoin and full self-custody. We're getting there. We are absolutely coming to that day. Much sooner than most realize, much sooner than governments realize, because, you know, they're too busy putting out, you know, their stupid games, that, you know, this parallel world is just, you know, growing in adoption. So sit back and enjoy the show. It's going to be interesting.
Tony, if I could play devil's advocate for a moment, I haven't heard anything about these $5,000 Doge checks. Maybe they're just going to send my Doge check to the farmers and they don't have to print new money to do it.
That is possible. That is very possible.
Rick, what's your take?
I think it's quite funny because it was only a couple of weeks back, or maybe even the last episode, where we were talking about Trump's tariffs. And I think our general sort of consensus on it was, you know, you can get into that debate about, you know, whether America wins the tariff war against Europe or against China, and then the reciprocal tariffs. And, you know, you can get into that whole thing and try and figure out, well, oh, you know, maybe America comes out of that fight slightly better than China or vice versa. But the problem with these fights is that everyone's going to take a few blows, right? Like, you can't get into a tariff war with the rest of the world and not take a few shots yourself. And the reality is that you know, this is just governments applying more taxes on everything, right? Because they're all completely broke. And I think, you know, the assertion we were trying to make was that, you know, generally this is bad news for the people. So I think there's a lot of Americans like cheering this on, thinking, well, we've been ripped off for a long time. We want to redress the balance. And I think there's some really valid arguments for the American people in there. But I think it's a case of, like, careful what you wish for, because this is exactly the kind of example, right? So, okay, we've introduced tariffs because we're going to try and you know, improve America's position by having this sort of trade war. But the problem is now you've got a section of your economy that's going to suffer because of these tariffs. And that's always going to happen. You're going to have these little pockets of things. When you start government intervention, you start breaking things. This is always what happens when a small group of people are crazy enough to think that they could centrally manage a global economy. I mean, you have to be bonkers to think that. Think of how many transactions and interactions, millions every day, that go up to make an economy. Right now, imagine thinking a room full of men in suits could possibly direct which direction it goes in. So they make decisions like applying tariffs, and then there are second order effects like, oh, bugger, now we've screwed over our farming industry. So to plug the gap, what do? Well, all right, we'll go back and use our favorite weapon, right? We'll go and get the money printer out and we'll print that problem away. But like Tony points out, well, now you've saved your farming industry, but now eggs cost $1,000 and no one can buy the eggs. And, you know, and then the problem moves here, then somewhere else. And it's just, it's an absolute nightmare. So, you know, it's a great example of like this central intervention by governments in our money, in our economies, in the way that we trade with each other is detrimental to everyone. So I guess I would kind of try and encourage everyone, whether you're in Europe or you're in the US or you're in China, wherever you are, understand that if we're all able to compete with each other freely in a free market, you wouldn't have to, like, don't pick a side, like, my country's going to win. Like, we're all going to lose if we keep fighting like this. What we want is actually a way that we can all cooperate with each other And that's going to be a hell of a lot easier if the government just gets the hell out of the way and we can go back to a sound money standard. But
separation of money and state, man, that's the only way this happens. Otherwise, you know, you're playing, you know, chase, you know, hit the gopher. You know that video game where the gopher pops up and you have to hit him? This is what governments are doing now. You know, they're trying to hit the next problem and trying to solve it. But it's a circus. It's an absolute circus.
Yeah. The only difference between communists and crony capitalists are that communists admit that they think they can control the global economy, but they're all doing the same thing. It's insanity, but I think it's been normalized for so many people. Like they truly believe that this isn't communism and we do need to do something to fix the next problem. And the reality is at some point they just need to let things blow up. And if you don't, you're going to make the problem worse down the road. It doesn't get better because you put a Band-Aid on these sorts of issues. You know, again, I think I said a week or so ago, we were talking about the tariffs. And I sympathize that I don't know the degree to which tariffs have been placed on the United States. And so if it's a bargaining chip for, you know, hey, let's get back to a level playing field. Okay, I understand that. At the same time, ultimately no one wins. And if everyone's putting 10% blanket tariffs on them, just remove the tariffs and let everyone compete. Like, it just makes no sense, you know? But this is just politicians feeling like they need to do something.
Man, governments need to get out of the way. There's no other way for the world to move forward. You can't have like a cancer living amongst you and expect you to remain healthy, right? Government, if it needs to exist, it needs to exist in its utility form. Fix the fucking roads. Make sure that, you know, everything is up and running the way it should. But stay out of people's lives. If a business performs badly, let it fail. It's not your place to bail people out, no matter who they are. You know, there's no friends in business. You either provide value or you fail. Market the signs. So separation of money and state. Otherwise, it comes down to violence. Like, you want to go up against like a criminal cartel, you have to fight it, you know? Like, you want to go to war with governments, be my guest, but you need an army bigger than theirs. That's the problem. So where the Bitcoin advantage comes in is that you defund these people. They become like, you castrate them. They become neutered. You can't fund anything anymore because nobody's using your product, your worthless money that you've used for decades to destroy the world. It's gone now. So, you know, it's like a kryptonite on governments. Completely useless, rendered back to its utility form factor. Fix the roads, administrative skills. That's it.
Well said. I hope our editor turns that into a short. Alrighty, up next, we've got an empty or a relatively empty mempool. I think before we started recording, we were at like one sat per V-byte. We're up to four, but we've had a series of empty or half empty blocks, you know, the last couple hours. Tony, I know this is something that's near and dear to your heart. You talk a lot about, you know, and I know we all talk about it, but I think it's particularly a point of passion for you that people need to be using Bitcoin as money. Offline, I made the comment that I think a lot of people are beginning to transact on Lightning for, you know, smaller, more day-to-day purchases, but we're not to where that's a wide scale, you know, broadly used network at the moment. What's your take on the empty mempool, and maybe give a call to action for people here?
Yeah, of course. I don't like seeing empty mempools. It just tells me that nobody's using Bitcoin as money. You know, like, a lot of people have been sold this lie that Bitcoin is only a store of value and you should hold on to it for dear life. You know, that's not true. For Bitcoin to succeed, it must be used as currency. Like, you have to use it to buy stuff like you were used to doing with the dollar or the euro or whatever your local currency is. If you don't do this, then how do you expect fast adoption, right? The more people who pay with Bitcoin incentivize businesses to start accepting it. And the more they start accepting it, the more it spreads globally, right? And that's how Bitcoin wins. That's how Bitcoin remains decentralized. But if you're only going to hold on to it like a store of value, it's going to get co-opted or something's going to go wrong along the way, you know, if you follow just that narrative. It's a store of value, medium of exchange, unit of account. The first line of that bloody white paper, it says it, peer-to-peer electronic cash. It doesn't say peer-to-peer electronic store of value. It says cash, it's money. So if I want to buy something from you, I want to pay you in Bitcoin. And you need to be able to accept it. It's a two-minute process for any business to start accepting Bitcoin. It's not this big hurdle. So that's not an excuse. And an empty mempool, you know, for me, it's like, I don't like it. It's bad news as far as I'm concerned. Now, granted, you know, maybe there's a lot more activity happening on layer twos and what have you, but still, you know, like we're not at that day and age where you cannot transact on-chain. Most of the activity will still happen on-chain. But with an empty mempool, that means nobody's doing anything. You're just sitting on it and just waiting until that stupid number goes up, hits, you know, something that you like, and then you're going to celebrate, which effectively means you've done absolutely nothing useful. So if you want Bitcoin to win, you want your purchasing power to go up to these astronomical levels, then you have to use it. You have to push the revolution forward so that it replaces the old legacy system. You can't sit around and wait for permission from the legacy system to use something that was created to put it out of business completely, right? So it's a form of brainwash, I think. I mean, I don't understand why it's so hard for people to comprehend this. There's a lot of, you know, blah, 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 you know, by some quote-unquote influencers that keep pushing this narrative of store of value alone. That's wrong. It's completely wrong. And it will harm every single Bitcoiner if that's the only thing you stick to. So just keep that in mind. Bitcoin is money. End of story. Use it.
Yeah. Rick, I imagine you feel somewhat like Tony.
Yeah, one of my favorite things to do with Bitcoin is to spend it. You know, not in some like crazy, you know, just like, you know, spending all my sats or whatever, like a lunatic. But you get a real bit of joy. Like just this week I bought a t-shirt, a hat, I bought some posters, and I'm making these transactions in Bitcoin. Now, to Tony's point, I was actually making those transactions over the Lightning Network this week, which wouldn't appear in the mempool, right? So maybe there's some explanation there that some activity, especially for smaller payments, like under $100, is maybe moving to Lightning a little bit. But it's, I don't think that explains the whole story of why the mempool is so empty. I agree with Tony that, you know, this narrative around Bitcoin being just a store of value, I think, is extremely misleading. Not just because, you know, it's a theoretical debate. I think our business actually proves the point, because the entire Bitcoin way runs on a Bitcoin standard, right? Like working with all sorts of people, like videographers, artists, designers, like, you know, conferences where we have a stand, like all sorts of things, right? We operate and we use Bitcoin as money. So it's always quite funny on Twitter, like some people, we might tweet about that and some people say, no, it's not money. And you try and explain to them, well, our whole business uses it as our only form of money. And they struggle with that. They can't seem to believe that it's real. But anyway, all I can share is my experience, like over the years. I can't explain why people aren't using it more on chain. And, you know, in fairness, like if you've got zero savings and you want to build up some savings, then, you know, holding Bitcoin is also a use case, right? It's not just spending. But if you're sitting there with a giant stack, right, and you're not then using that and deploying that capital in ways that either bring you pleasure or you invest in business or you try and make things happen, then I think that's a real shame. So look, here's the thing, though. It's always an opportunity. Over the years, I've seen times where the mempools absolutely stuffed full, transactions are $25-$30, and everyone's screaming, oh, Bitcoin's dead, it's unusable, you can't use it for payments. And then when the mempool's empty and the fees are really, really, really low, everyone's like, see, Bitcoin's dead, like no one wants to use Bitcoin. And I don't really know what drives the you know, it moving one way or the other, but it seems to be fairly cyclical. So I would imagine in my lifetime, I'm going to see another period where the fees are really high. So my advice to anyone would be, well, now is a really good time to do things like UTXO consolidation. You know, if you've been DCAing for you know, every month buying $50 worth of Bitcoin, you've got all these tiny little UTXOs. Well, you want to merge those now into a larger UTXO while the fees are cheap and it doesn't cost you a lot to do so, so your money is more spendable in the future. I would definitely take that opportunity. And we've got a guide. If you go to our blog, I think it's our featured article. Go and read about UTXO management. Now is a great time to experiment, move some Bitcoin around. And yeah, the fees will go back up. I'm sure of it. And the blogs will fill up again. I think it's probably partly driven by the fact the price is down. Because like we said, everyone's here for number go up. And number hasn't been going up that much recently, right? So everyone's, I don't know what they're doing. They've gone fishing or something. But yeah, I'm sure short-lived.
Yeah, no, I agree. Spend and replace. That's the best option. If you see a place that'll accept Bitcoin, do your part and spend it. And then just go buy a little bit more. Alrighty, last one. The gal who can't escape the news. Hawktua girl. She had her investigation into her pump and dump meme coin closed. And meanwhile, the Samurai wallet founders remain under house arrest. So I guess it pays to be an internet celebrity versus a builder. Rick, I'll let you. I know you've got a soft spot in particular for the Samurai devs and an appreciation for all they've done. And feel free to comment on Hawktua girl. What's her real name? I even know it. If you'd like.
Haley, I think.
Haley? Okay.
Yeah.
I believe
something. I thought like I had a soft spot for Haley.
Most definitely not. No, I mean, this story is enough to drive you crazy. In fact, this story is enough to make me miss Gary Gensler, right? I'll say it, right? Like, Gary wouldn't have been putting up with this nonsense, right? Like, as much as everyone hated Gary because they thought he was bad for Bitcoin, what I agree with Gary on is that, like, these are securities, right? They are securities, and they are committing fraud when they're launching these stupid coins. And I guess I agree with Gary, right? Like, Hawktua girl, whatever Haley her name is, she should be facing punishment. And they ripped people off to the tune of millions and millions. And then she just ghosted everyone. I don't know if you guys remember, there was like a little voice clip. She was on like a Twitter Spaces. And loads of guys were arguing and going, where's the money? What's going on? And just she just cut someone off mid-sentence and says something like, oh, well, guys, I got to go to bed now, you know, in her little southern accent or whatever. And she's like, I'll see y'all later, and just signs out. And that's the last we've seen of her or the $50 million. And I can only assume that she's, you know, she had a boyfriend or something called Pookie, right? So she's off with Pookie. Pookie's getting some hawk tour or whatever. They're off living this nice life, right? Now, as much as that's funny and as much as it's shocking, The point of this tweet that's interesting is the juxtaposition, right, between that situation, which is an absolute shit show, where she's defrauded people for millions of dollars and they're just like, just let her go free. And on the other side, you have the Samurai devs, whose only crime was to develop some open source software where they never touched anybody else's money. They never transmitted anybody else's money. They certainly didn't help launder any money, because it's very difficult to do if you can't touch someone's money. And yet they've been in under house arrest now for 342 days, I think, somewhere like almost a year they've been locked up. So it goes to show you, right, justice doesn't really exist anymore. And the reason the Samurai devs are getting hammered is because your government doesn't like you. And your government doesn't want you to have any privacy. And your government doesn't want you to control your own money. So what the government is happy to happen is some crazy girl who got famous talking about blowjobs can rip you off and they'll let her go scot-free. But the guys who didn't actually commit any crimes, but were trying to give you some privacy and some sovereignty, well, those guys are going to get thrown under the jail. So listen, keep voting. Keep voting for politicians. Keep thinking they're going to save you. And we will keep pointing out these news stories that show they couldn't despise you anymore. You are cattle to them.
Man, you had to bring in the samurai, right, to ruin the buzz behind the fun aspect of this story.
It was such a good role,
and then you had to turn it serious with the samurai guys. But yeah, you're absolutely right. It's completely ridiculous that people actually producing, you know, value are put in jail just because, you know, the government thinks it's like a tool to prevent them from stealing from you, basically. That's why these poor people are in jail. But the Haktua girl, and I mean, come on, it wasn't so bad what she did. I mean, look at her. She, you know, like free Haktuas, you know, she's cute, Southern accent. I can see the appeal of it, right? Like, I mean, why not? Then again, you know, is she really to blame? You know, like, did she tell all of these morons to put their life savings on a meme coin? Like, what did they think they were going to get? They think that she was going to give out like free blowjobs, you know, or she's going to pull like a Lily Phillips act where she's going to line up 10,000 of her investors, you know, for a happy ending. Like, I mean, I don't understand.
Well, that would have been a problem.
If you're going to go after people like her, why don't you just shut down casinos altogether? Like, I mean, it's a similar form of bullshit, right? It's gambling all the same. You go in, you think you're going to make like a quick buck, and then you lose. So why aren't casinos shut down? Like, why is it just crypto now is the biggest fraud? They're all fraud, but, you know, they're all filed under for entertainment purposes. So, yeah, it sucks, you know, that people actually believe that, you know, they're going to make life-changing wealth on a meme coin. But hey, you know, like, you want a free market? Free market is full of stupid people. So if somebody wants to dump his life savings in a meme, be my guest. But when you get wrecked without a happy ending, you know, well, lesson learned, I hope.
Yeah. Mom, if you're listening, I'm sorry. Can't control these guys. For everyone tuning in, thank you guys. Appreciate it as always. If you need help with Bitcoin in proper 100% self-custody, which you should have, go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast. We can help you do it right the first time. We also help with online privacy, setting up privacy phones. We have a Plan B residency option. Everything you need to be self-sovereign. Again, that's thebitcoinway.com/podcast. Gents, as always, it's a pleasure. And I just never know what I'm going to get on Bitcoin Banter. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Michael. See you next time.
Thanks, Michael.
Cheers.